110, Saturday, February 11, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett alone, 1.15 to 2.15 p.m. Dr. Sharp came with hearty greetings. Alluding to some recent sittings at Toledo, he said, "They have drawn upon you badly, Admiral. It had to be done, the force must be got from someone. I am going to bring an Indian to you." Then followed some questions and answers on the subject of materialization. I had been with Johnson the evening before. Johnson was not well, he thought he had lumbago. An astonishing incident now occurred. Gray Fever, who is Johnson's control, and who had never visited Mrs. Rhett before, spoke in a loud voice, "Chief, from across the big pond, I want to say something to you. My medium not fit for anything for 1 or 2 weeks. I sorry. I do my best for you, and can do no more. I no kill my medium for anybody. You understand, Chief. Joe, Mr. Johnson, he worse than he was yesterday. I impress you to come away. He not know I here, he not know you here. I find out from Sweet Angel where you come. It is his kidneys, not lumbago, and he been bad ever since he hang that paper on wall. I do no more for you. I sorry. Q, how about Mr. Johnson's heart, Grafy there? A, he got no heart, and his kidneys all in trouble. Squaw Johnson sick too." Mrs. Rhett said, "I wonder if that is a correct account." I replied, "I believe it. Gray Fever, I never tell lie. If I say I can do nothing, I can do nothing." I said, "I remember your telling me a perfectly true story 2 years ago, Gray Fever. Thank you for your communication. I shall write to your medium this afternoon. Tell me, Gray Fever, how was it that my guide was able to pull her hand away from mine the other afternoon?" Gray Fever, "I help her, and I draw from your legs to keep her on her feet. I draw much from you, if I not draw from you, spirit, form, go all to pieces." Q, "Then it is injurious to your medium for a form to dematerialize quickly?" A, "They should fall very slowly." Chief, "May I come to you across the big pond?" Q, "Very glad, Gray Fever, if you will. Thank you very much. Goodbye. I hope to come back in 2 years. A, "I not sure Joe be here then," mournfully. "When he go, I go too." One remarkable feature in Greyfeather's visit was that his voice direct was very similar to his voice when he speaks through the organism of Johnson at Toledo. At the close of a sitting I wrote to Mr. Johnson, giving him a full account of Greyfeather's warning. I followed this up with a visit on Monday, February 13, p.m., and found him then fully disposed to take his disease seriously. We cancelled all engagements, and I have not seen him since. My guide came in for a long chat. Q, "Do you know where I was yesterday?" A, "Yes." Q, "There was one phenomenon at Johnson's?" A, "Yes. The trumpet," I said. "Iola." "Correct." Q, "Where was I in the evening?" A, "At the Sweet Young Girls." "Correct. Miss Ada's sales." Q, "Who wrote those notes to me?" A, "The medium wrote all those, automatic writing." Sunday, February 12, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett for half an hour a.m. Dr. Sharp came first. "I am sorry for the state of your legs. You have been terribly drawn upon. You are going to Rochester." Q, "How do you know that, doctor?" A, "Iola told me. That medium, Mrs. Georgia, is much better, and I think you may get something." Then I talk with my guide, chiefly about impressions on old photographs. Grafy there came in unexpectedly. "Chief, I sorry your legs so bad." In answer to my inquiries about Johnson he said, "He go about, he smile. He make things pleasant, but he ought to be on slab, in his bed. I come, chief, to magnetize your legs. I was wondering if I could get back safely to Toledo. My train was to go in an hour. After the seance I felt better than I had felt for a long time, and accomplished my journey and afternoon engagements without difficulty." Tuesday, February 14, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett alone, 2.15 to 3.15 p.m. Dr. Sharp spoke loudly and well about Johnson, Dr. John, and Greyfeather's messages. He said, "We hope to do without any operation. We don't want him to die, you know. Dr. John has got your letter, and is much pleased. Q. Why should a distinguished historical character such as Galileo come to me? A. No personations could come to you. If Galileo felt he could help those that come after him in the same work, he would do so. Mr. Gladstone came to you, to Cole, and many others before the control had finished talking. Iola spoke, and Sharp said, I guess I had better go now. I then had a long talk with my guide. Dr. Sharp came back and gave me some very interesting information about my son and other members of my family. On this occasion Mrs. Rhett had a whim to supply the flowers herself, and, at some inconvenience, she had gone out and bought a heap of narcissi and other flowers. As Iola was going away she said, Thank you, Mrs. Rhett, for all you have done, and for the flowers. Wednesday, February 15, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett, 11.30 to 12.15. Conditions not very good, Thor. My guide alone came at this sitting. When we sat down the psychic exclaimed, Oh, there is a wonderful light at your knees. As Iola told me she had brought grey fever with her, I assume this was the treatment going on. According to a preconcerted understanding, I tested Iola about 3 cartavisite I had placed against the bureau in my room the previous evening. Q. Whose photos were those, and how were they placed? A. The one of me holding a letter was on the right, the one holding a hat was in the center, and the crinoline one on the left. Correct. Q. The one on the left was your sister? A little girl in the old-fashioned crinoline dress? A. Yes, yes, I said so. With the two ponies. This puzzled me for a minute or two, till I remembered that on the table at which the figure stood there were 2 bronze statuettes of horses. Q. I cannot understand. Ponies? A. Yes, 2 little horses on the table. Iola talked for 35 minutes about family matters. Among other things she said, I wish you to stop Sunday in Rochester, and speak in the church. I replied, I am afraid I cannot do that, as I have business in New York on Monday. A mistake, as it happened. The appointment was for Tuesday. Iola, well, I do not wish to ask you to do what is inconvenient. After the sitting was over I looked at my notebook, and discovered my error. The next day I expressed my regret at having refused to stop at Rochester, and told her how the mistake occurred. She said, I knew that, but did not press my request, as I was uncertain if something new had not occurred to change your original plans. Thursday, February 16, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett alone, 11.30 to noon. My guide gave a good account of what I had been doing the previous night, visiting, dining with friends, talking. She also gave a correct description of how the cards were arranged on the bureau on my return home. Before she spoke, a man talked, who said he was the father of an Admiral F. in our Navy. Q. Do you wish me to tell your son? A. Oh, no. He wouldn't understand. I did not see the use of this visit. The name was quite correct. There is such an officer, and I know him. 111, Thursday, February 16, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett, the psychic, and Mr. and Mrs. Z, 2 to 3.45 p.m. Dr. Sharp came first. He talked well for some time, and said grey fever would be sent for. Many etherealizations, but none very satisfactory to me. About 20 minutes after we sat down Iola came, and, after throwing about a few drops of water from the flowers, some of which touched Mrs. Z, and me, made a very neat little speech, thanking the Z.S for their kindness to me during my stay at Toledo. Pansy again. It is quite beyond my power to give any idea of what this Indian girl said. With her yas, for yeses, and her chuckles, and her talk about Chief Jim, whom she called a sticking plaster, she kept us laughing for 10 minutes. Her manner was inimitable. She declared that her friend Maggie Gore had manifested since her death in New York, where she had many friends. Then came Cole on several relatives of Mr. and Mrs. Z, and 2 friends. Silver Moon, with his usual war-whoop and urge, he showed a faint disc, and departed. Edna, the nun, who etherealized and talked to the Z.S. Grey Fever, who implied that Johnson was no worse. I think I see him scratch paper this morning, Maybe to Dr. John. Squaw Johnson she fright about Joe. He do the best he can for himself. Then to me, Chief, I magnetize your legs. I go across and see your wigwam, it sits on rough bottom. House all shut up. Your wife, she go out. I see her put her bonnet on. I think three squaws inside. I see room down low, with big fireplace. Three pictures of Iola there. I go upstairs round and round and round, and find your sleep room, big bed with knockers on it, wood bed. Q, no, grey feather, not wood, the knobs look like gold. A, that no gold, Chief, that lacquer. Q, did you see Hypatia and Cleopatra? Meaning the pictures. A, no. What I care for those squaws. I have three precipitated pictures of my guide in my library in the basement, and one copy. The round and round and round apostrophe is rather expressive, as there are five flights of stairs from this room to my bedroom. The wood bed I do not understand. Thursday, February 16, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett for about half an hour. My guide came, and talked exclusively of family matters. Friday, February 17, 1911. With Mrs. Rhett alone, 11 to 12. Conversations with Iola and her father about family matters. I left for Rochester in the afternoon. 112. It so happened that Mrs. Rhett came to New York on a visit to friends on February 23. The lady of the house most kindly accorded me permission to have a sitting with the psychic in private on February 24. It took place in the morning, between 10.5 and 11.15. Atmospheric conditions perfect. My guide had, by this time, become very proficient in using the direct voice, with and without the assistance of the trumpet, but I hardly expected her to show the amount of power that was exhibited on this occasion. After a short interval, say 5 minutes, she made herself known through the trumpet, and spoke for 50 minutes on certain important private matters. I asked her what I had been doing the previous evening, and she gave me an exact description of how my time had been employed, beginning in this way: at 8.20 we called at a house inn, then followed a little story showing a fair general acquaintance with the inmates of the house, and evincing an accurate knowledge of their aims in life. It left me in no doubt as to her presence with me on that visit. Dr. Sharp then came for 5 minutes, and gave me a hearty send-off, in his usual genial manner. I sailed the next morning for England. In closing my experiences with Mrs. Rhett in America, I must add a few comments. I am without any receptive mediumistic gifts, and claim no more natural powers of hearing and seeing than the average man of my age. I am conscious that, during the sittings I had with this gifted psychic, I may have missed much which younger men, or those even slightly endowed with clairaudient and clairvoyant powers, would have heard and seen. Often it happened that others heard messages which I did not, and saw full forms and faces that I was unable to distinguish. It must not be supposed, therefore, that I have been able to give a wholly fair estimate of what usually takes place in her presence. No psychic ever brought me so near to the spirit life. It is to Mrs. Rhett that I owe the absolute knowledge of the near proximity of my friends who have passed over, and I feel greatly indebted to her for making it so easy for me to obtain that knowledge. It is a possession of priceless value, it outwears all time, and places the fortunate man who has it in a position of certainty that death has no sting and the grave no victory, that what is right, that all things work together for good, and that our brief span on earth, acquiring our individuality, is but the introduction to a higher life of greater possibilities of usefulness and expansion. Mrs. Rhett believes there are no such entities as evil spirits. Not one has ever entered her room. It took me some time to explain to her that their name is Legion, and that it is owing to the vigilance of Dr. Sharp they are warned off her premises. The utterances of spirits in her presence exhibit all the human emotions except anger. Moderation, tact, and loving kindness are the watchwords. She is indeed blessed in having been the passive instrument of consolation and rest to hundreds, and hope to thousands who have come within the influence of her psychic power. It is to be hoped that her frail life may be preserved for many years. I am most grateful also to her hearty control, Dr. Sharp, whom I look upon now as an old friend. A. W. Kaiser. I have written of this psychic in Chapter 8. He is an honest, manly young fellow. Since 1909 he has developed considerably. His phase of mediumship is the direct voice through the trumpet in the dark, no etherealizations. The interviews are short. He lives at 97 Cass Avenue, Detroit. I found he did not remember me until we were nearly through the first seance, when the communications from the spirits who spoke to me reminded him of our former meetings. He does not go into trance, and hears all that goes on, like Mrs. Rhett. Monday, January 23, 1911. Alone with Kaiser, from 10 to 11 a.m. Atmospheric conditions perfect. Iola came and talked about the next meeting at the Johnsons, then a brother of mine, then Kitty, one of the habitués of Johnson's cabinet, who said she would do her best to get the conditions right for my next experiments at Toledo. Next came a brother-in-law, then an Indian girl, guide of Kaiser, called Leota. She introduced herself by a little piping note, who, but had little to say. Gray Fever then made himself known. Me help you, me try to make good conditions for you to sit with my medium. He was followed by my sister Catherine, who said, we are all here. Q, the other day, at Johnson's, after kissing you, I put my hand on your shoulder, and found nothing. How was that? A, I was just beginning to dematerialize. Finally, Mr. Kaiser's control, Dr. Jenkins, who spoke well and clearly, and moved about at my request over and on either side of me, showing that he could speak from any part of the room. The psychic sat facing me, our knees about 2.5 feet apart. 113, Tuesday, January 24, 1911. With Kaiser, 10.23 to 11 a.m. First Iola and her brother, then Dr. Richard Hodgson, with greetings. Q, do you know what Hislop has been doing recently? A. Yes, investigating. Name run off into a blur. Q. Investigating what? A. At Toledo, investigating Ada. Q. Do you mean Ada Bisnett? A. Yes. 2 days before Professor Hislop had left Toledo, after a week's sittings with Miss Ada, he has since published a report on her remarkable mediumship. Then came Catherine, who said that she, too, was trying to help to make good conditions for my final experiments with Johnson. She was followed by Sir Isaac Newton. I repeated our conversation of February 4, 1909, see Light, 1909, page 314, and Chapter 8, of this book, which he confirmed. I said, we are always in a difficulty about personations. He replied, there are such things as personations, but they never come to earnest-minded investigators. Q. Do you know if the Cleopatra and Hypatia who come to me are personators or not? Question mark A. I cannot tell unless I investigate. But, as they come to you, I cannot believe they are. Q. Is there a planet beyond Neptune? A. There is, and astronomers on your side are, I believe, now looking for it. Q. Galileo came to me the other day, and said there was not. Do the etheric waves in wireless telegraphy pass through or over the earth and mountains? A. As ether is everywhere, they pass through everything. The vibrations of etheric waves for wireless telegraphy are analogous to X-rays, which, as you know, can pass through solid obstacles. There are differences of opinion on our side, as on yours. Many men of science are working away here, and making experiments on the earth plane. They impress mortals. Q. There is a friend of mine in England, living in Wiltshire, who has worked long on the gravitation theory you gave me last time we met. A. Yes, I know, I impressed him. Q. I mean Admiral F. A. Yes. I have been working long here on gravitation and anti-gravitation. Q. I doubt if my friend realizes that he is being impressed. A. Perhaps not. But that does not matter to us as long as the impression is effectual. Then came Blackfoot, one of Geyser's Indian guides, and Leota, with her little pipe, who. Both said they would try and help conditions for the Johnson experiments. Finally, the control, Dr. Jenkins, made himself known, and said, "We are trying to make conditions perfect for the Johnson materializations queue. Can you talk behind them while I hold the medium's hands?" "A, I will try." This experiment failed. Atmospheric conditions excellent. 114, Wednesday, January 25, 1911. With Kaiser alone, 10.20 to 11 a.m. First, three relatives manifested, then Tim O'Brien, one of Johnson's habitués, who came to explain that he and all were doing their best to make conditions perfect for my experiments at Toledo. He was followed by Lombroso, the Italian scientist, who said that at present he was working in the fourth sphere. He desired to say that he was satisfied with the expression of the truth he had given on the earth plane. This was repeated at my request. He went on to say that astrological conditions were now specially favorable for psychical development. I observed that Giuseppe Palladino did not possess psychic power equal to the mediums in this neighborhood, to which he agreed. Lombroso was followed by Leota, with her who pipe. Then came Blackfoot, who was emphatic, "Me make conditions good for Chief, and help him in experiments with Dr. Jenkins, and at Johnson's." Finally, Dr. Jenkins. I asked him about personating spirits. He said, "They do not come to earnest-minded investigators. Your development here will lift you speedily in our life." He hoped to bring Sir Isaac Newton tomorrow. "Q, will you endeavor to talk behind me when I have hold of both the medium's hands?" "A, I will try." I drew my chair close up to Kaiser's chair, and controlled both his hands on his knees. After an interval of about 10 minutes, Dr. Jenkins spoke distinctly, first behind and above my left ear, then behind and above my right. He then said, "I wanted you to hear me on both sides." The trumpet was dropped upon our joined hands, hitting my head on the way. Atmospheric conditions good. 115, Thursday, January 26, 1911. With Kaiser alone, 10.12 to 10.45 p.m. Atmospheric conditions bad. Blackfoot, the Indian, grunted out greetings, and said he thought Sir Isaac Newton was coming. He had said he would. A brother of mine, not often in evidence, came with promises of help. Then Sir Isaac Newton. I asked him to be so good as to tell me what he had meant on a former visit about anti-gravitation. He replied, "We are investigating the forces which can be generated to oppose gravity. There are such forces. For instance, supposing you get a musical note of equal vibrations to those of gravity, you have a force sufficient to oppose gravity. If you get a musical note the vibrations of which exceed those of gravity, you have a force anti-gravitational." At my request he repeated the words "musical note" twice. He continued, "Construct a bell and strike it. The sound vibrations from that bell meet the normal sound vibrations and overcome them. I am impressing your friend on this subject. I wrote my notes in the next room immediately the sitting was over, and I conclude that both Kaiser and I were to some extent impressed still by the spirit we had heard talking so clearly a few minutes before. I am sure that I took in accurately the words of the message." Kaiser agreed. We thought he might mean, "There are musical vibrations which, when set in motion, enable objects near to overcome the force of gravity. But I cannot offer any explanation. I affirm that the words I have repeated were used, and there I must leave it." Q. To Sir Isaac, "Am I right in supposing that psychic demonstrations are performed more easily in this neighborhood, around the Great Lakes of America, than elsewhere?" "A. Yes, this is on account of the electrical conditions." Then Leota piped her who, and said she was helping to make conditions right. She was followed by Dr. Jenkins, who said, "We shall do little this morning, as we are collecting spiritual forces to help you in your investigations in the near future. I will visit you in England, the whole spiritual world will assist you in your work, I know, and will help the beautiful spirit who attends you. Goodbye." As I have explained above, the final experiments alluded to in these notes that I wished to carry out with Johnson were never completed, on account of his serious state of health. My guide had spoken twice of her apprehension that Johnson's condition would not permit it, and so it turned out. There is not a doubt in my mind that Mr. Kaiser is a true psychic. He is now 35 years of age, and has plenty of time to develop into a medium like Mrs. Rhett. He is well guarded by Dr. Jenkins, and I think he will do so. This medium, also, is good to the poor, and admits many without payment. I wish him every success, and a long life of usefulness in the exercise of his gift. Epilogue. When I said goodbye to Mrs. Rhett in New York, on February 24, I little thought to see her again for some years. I knew that it was unlikely I should be able to leave England for many a long day, on account of the precarious state of my wife's health. In future, I should have to depend upon mental impressions by my guide for communion with the spirit world. It happened, however, that Mr. W. T. Stead invited her to spend some time at his country home near London in May, June, and July, 1911. Owing to his courtesy, I was able to again enjoy the privilege of hearing the voices and obtaining further evidence of spirit action through her mediumship. Mrs. Rhett arrived at Mr. Stead's house at 1 p.m., Tuesday, May 23, and, after tea, two ladies and I induced the psychic to give us an opportunity of testing her gift in a highly magnetized room on the first floor of the house. It was expected that the power of Mrs. Rhett would be considerably reduced by the change of climatic conditions, if, indeed, it did not disappear altogether. She had spent 2 days in a fog at sea, had just been driven across London by her host, and everything around was entirely new to her. The house, it is true, was in a very quiet situation about 300 feet above the River Thames, and the psychic influences within the house of the very best. We entered a pitch-dark room at 5.5 p.m., and sat till 6.20. Before we had been long in our chairs, Julia spoke through the trumpet, giving Mrs. Rhett a hearty welcome. She was followed by Mr. William Stead, who also greeted the psychic. He conversed very plainly and sent messages to his father. Julia invited me to her bureau meeting on the following evening. Then came Iola, with whom I made an appointment for 11 o'clock on the following morning. I specially wanted to get some information about my family. After she had agreed to come, she spoke these enigmatical words: "There have been many changes." Before her voice was heard, the psychic said, "I see the name of _, Iola's earth name." She also saw the name of Stuart Null, which, no doubt, was Sir J. Stuart Null, the late Lord Mayor of London. I knew him when he was in life, and so did my father. The spirit assented to his name. Very faint forms were seen near the cabinet by Mrs. Rhett and the two ladies, who are both mediumistic. I saw one only. The psychic exhibited good clairvoyance to both of the ladies, whether dry and hazy. This trial was, to us, most satisfactory. It was certain that Mrs. Rhett's gift was not in abeyance, and we arranged for 3 séances on the following day: 1. A private one for me at 11 a.m. 2. A sitting for a distinguished officer, who lived some 20 miles off, at 2 p.m. 3. Julia's bureau sitting in the evening. Wednesday, May 24, 1911. I sat with Mrs. Rhett alone, from 10.50 to 12.15. First came Iola's mother, speaking very low. I could not understand her. To my great astonishment, Grafy there came in with his loud voice, to explain that Grandma had just been speaking to me about the little papoose. It was in her charge, in the kindergarten. It had suffered no pain, having died in its sleep. I was to tell its father. 12 days previous to this sitting, my youngest granddaughter, aged 5 months, had been suffocated, as we thought, in a fire which broke out over its cot. The evidence at the inquest went to show that its little life was ended before the fire reached it. The psychic knew nothing whatever of this catastrophe, and the ladies in the house only knew the bare facts, which they had not spoken of to Mrs. Rhett. Greyfeather's voice was loud and much the same as at Detroit. He said his medium, Johnson, was better. Dr. John had done him good. He not go to bed till late last night. At noon in England it is 6 a.m. Toledo. The Indian promised to magnetize me and make it possible for me to sit 3 times that day, without injury. Then came Iola, who talked for half an hour about private matters. She confirmed what Greyfeather had said about the baby being in the charge of the relative mentioned, and said it was taken for its own good. Physically it was a normal child, but psychically not.